Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We're coming to you from the Voice of America studios in Washington, D.C. On our show today, we look at some of the changes taking place in the Horn of Africa, specifically in Ethiopia, the second most populous country in Africa. For the past couple of years, Ethiopia has been undergoing some of the most rapid growth and development in Africa. In fact, the IMF says that the country has one of the fastest growing economies on the continent, recently overtaking Ghana. But as much as Ethiopia has been going through this impressive economic growth and transformation, its politics has been in turmoil. And for the last 2 years, protesters, especially in the Oromia region, have been demanding for political reforms, and the protests often led to confrontations with the government forces, leading to the death of hundreds of people, according to some activists, many others languishing in jail. And these tensions are said to have been partly responsible for the resignation of former Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn. A new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, was appointed. He assumed office in April of this year, 2018. But upon taking office, the 41-year-old Prime Minister has taken a different and often surprising approach to dealing with the crisis in his country. And that approach, that new approach, is the basis of our conversation today here on Upfront. And our guests, Henok Fente and Salim Solomon, both my colleagues, reporters who have been covering this region for many years, and they will take us through some of the of this unprecedented reform process that we see taking place right now in Ethiopia. And they will also talk to us about some of the internal dynamics that bring Ethiopia to what many observers say is a historic moment in the country's politics, but most importantly, the local and regional implications of some of these reforms, some of these changes that we see taking place in Ethiopia. Stay tuned. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Upfront on the Voice of America, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. We want to welcome in the studio Henok Fente and Salim Solomon. Thank you both for joining us today. Now, lots is happening in Ethiopia, lots of daily developments that seem to be catching many observers off guard in as far as what we usually hear about the country. For starters, the country's members of parliament recently voted to lift a state of emergency that was imposed 3 months ago across the country to curb widespread anti-government protests. Political prisoners have been released. The country announced plans to privatize partly at least some of the big government prostitutes. Lots of changes. Let me start off with you, Henok. These changes are quite unprecedented, aren't they?
Well, I agree with you, Jackson. There's changes happening in Ethiopia in the highest circle of political leadership, led by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, as well as the president of Oromia region, Lemma, and also in the streets. And this is one thing that really fascinates me, is there is a youth-led movement in Ethiopia, in the streets, by a group of youth that organized themselves, that have been protesting for social justice, economic inclusion, and good governance. In the Oromia region, particularly a group called Kero, that really provided the political leverage that the current Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed used to propel himself into the helm of the leadership of the ruling party, EPRDF. Also, there's several, but somehow fragmented, movements in other regions, in Amhara as well, Fano. So there is a very interesting youth-led movement in Ethiopia, in the highest circles and in the streets of Ethiopia.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Some of the changes that are happening right now in Ethiopia also are reverberating across the border into Eritrea, specifically that whole border situation that finally Ethiopia decided that they're going to honor the agreement they had signed many years ago. We had a conversation yesterday, and we're saying that this I think will have more of an impact on Eritrea than it will in Ethiopia.
That's right. I mean, it's very fascinating to see beyond just within Ethiopia changes that we're seeing, that you know, a youth-led movement is basically, you can see the ramifications of what's happening on the ground. This is a young a prime minister, if not in Ethiopia, across the continent. And so some of the changes he's making also affect regional disputes that have been lingering for over 18 years. Eritrea, as you rightfully mentioned, is one of them. The Eritrea Boundary the Ethiopia-Eritrea Boundary Commission has been a stalemate for a very, very long time, 18 years plus ongoing. And so the conversation that is happening right now is, you know, Ethiopia has accepted the ruling for a very long time. Mm-hmm. That has never been disputed. Sure, there's been like political discourse where they backtrack a little bit and they say, you know, they would make political rhetoric. But in terms of accepting it, they've accepted it. But what's next is what has been as you mentioned, used by the government of Eritrea as well to militarize the country and also, you know, ensure maybe the demilitarization of the border from the Ethiopia side. So what has been missing from the Ethiopia side, aside from rhetoric, is to demilitarize that flashpoint, especially the flashpoint town of Bademe. So now, in 2003, I remember I was just having a discussion with Henok right before we got in, is that all of the local voices, if you've heard, I mean, think about it, all your life you're administered under the Ethiopian government or regional administration. All of a sudden, aside from the rhetoric that we're hearing, lives are going to be changed. So what would be interesting to see, aside from demilitarization, is we'd like to see what kind of implementation, what it looks like.
And we on the Ethiopian side?
On both sides.
On both sides.
And also, like, the locals. I mean, there's got to be some sort of negotiation.
The locals have been living under this cloud all these years.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a question of property rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And respecting people's wills as well. People may choose to go on the Eritrean side and stay in the town of Bademe, but if some people choose to relocate themselves, land rights, property rights, all of this needs to be negotiation. So this seems like a decision that it's the beginning of a process where people need to be consulted. It's a beginning of a process as far as how far the actual demarcation of the border between the two countries is going to play from here on.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the beginning of a discussion that's been, like Salim said, stalled for
18
well
years.
Over two decades.
One thing I would also want to mention, of course, action means pulling the troops out, the Ethiopian troops occupying that flashpoint out. Mm. But the next point is to also think about the soldiers. These are soldiers on the ground. What does that mean?
They've been deployed for all these years.
Mm-hmm. All these years. In fact, Abiy Ahmed, during his speech, he said, we looked at three points. One of them is, it's one thing to say, no peace situation. But it's another to say, but there's no all-out war, but you're looking at each other waiting for something to happen. As a soldier, he said, if I'm not verbatim, he says something like, this is like, you're dead as, I mean, you don't know what's
going to happen. Young people also at the same time. I think so.
So
this decision, a very interesting point that Salim pointed out is the demilitarization. What does that bring to young people in both countries from the Ethiopian side?
Exactly.
I mean, the kind of jobs that we're creating along those borders and the relationship between the two countries is creating jobs for soldiers. At the same time, Eritrea also has this mandatory national service
where the majority of youth
are being forcefully recruited into a national army. Mm. So
because of this militarization process
taking place. So now, I say it's a beginning of a process. How does this translate into business? Because at the end of the day, two countries, two leaderships can agree on political terms as far as, you know, borders and local politics, regional politics go. But how does that translate into bread and butter for the young people living in both countries? Mm-hmm. And that is quite interesting how this translates.
Given that this was jobs. A center of tension in for both countries, do you feel like the relationship between Ethiopia and Eritrea is going to actually be better now?
We'll have to wait and see. See, the thing is, when it comes to the border commission's decision, it was has always been from the Ethiopia side to abort its soldiers from that flashpoint. Mm. So that's the first step. And that's been the reason why the Eritrean government has been focusing. Because the thing is, one of the legal teams that I spoke to yesterday said something very important, that aside from the requirement of abiding by international law, what's expected from Eritrea is beyond just this border skirmish.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know? So that conversation has been held as, Eritrea is the size of Pennsylvania, to put it for the diaspora context. Mm. It's a very small country compared to Ethiopia. Ethiopia has 100 million people. We're talking about it's not really they're using this as an existential threat.
Giant is going to swallow
exactly.
us type situation.
That's,
right.
That perspective is very important. Mm-hmm. It's very important because it drives all of the conversation around what we're saying.
And it is also an opportunity, if I may add, because Eritrea has all the access to the sea. Ethiopia is a landlocked country with nearly 100 million people. That, for me, is market. Mm. It speaks market.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're talking about some of the political changes that are happening in Ethiopia with my colleagues Henok Fente and Salim Solomon. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
This is DNA from Take Back the Mic, representing on the radio with my man Jackson. This is Up Front, baby. One time, right here, Taking Back the Mic. One love to all of y'all. Peep the tune.
Hi, this is Liz Kemigisha from Kampala, Uganda, and I love listening to Up Front.
My people waiting the chalet, they listen to Jackson Bongani for Up Front with the For Voice of America.
Everybody run, run, run. Everybody's got us, got us.
Welcome back. In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We are coming to you from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington, D.C. I'm in the studio with Henok Fente and Salim Solomon, both reporters with the Africa Service here at the Voice of America. And we're looking at some of the political reforms taking place in Ethiopia under the leadership of the new Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. Prime Minister Ahmed is leading the kind of reforms that are catching even the most ardent critics of his government's rather by surprise, mostly because of the reconciliatory approach that he has taken in dealing with a political crisis that had crippled a big part of the country for years. And some of those reforms have wide-ranging implications, not just on local politics, but also on its neighbors, specifically Eritrea. For many years, there have been this tension between the two countries over a long-standing border issue. And in another surprise announcement, the Ethiopian government said that it would fully accept and comply with an earlier agreement, the 2000 Algiers Agreement and the 2002 Boundary Commission decision. So, back in the studio here, guys, what do you think about this decision for the government to fully accept and comply with this agreement, the 2002 Border Commission agreement or decision?
The decision to accept the Algiers Agreement and the decision of the Ethiopia-Eritrea Border Commission, it was decided right then and there, but the implementation, took a long time. So, factually speaking, two things happened. Ethiopia removed some of the preconditions to demilitarize and move its forces from Badima. Mm. And so it wasn't in principle, but they have accepted it. So it's accepted. and moving on with no preconditions. The most important decision that the Central Committee of EPRDF made, in my opinion, is on the economy, because Ethiopia is trying to get access into the global market. Mm. Ethiopia has applied to be a member of the World Trade Organization in 2005, and there are requirements set forth by the World Trade regime that Ethiopia, the kind of economic reforms that Ethiopia needs. We have seen the beginning of that. In the statement where, you know, Ethiopian Airlines, Ethio Telecom, these are huge industries controlled by the government, 100%. So they're going to start privatizing those. They're going to start privatizing the very corrupt sugar plantation and sugar processing industries. That has also created a lot of tensions, has risen the national debt of the country, which according to some of my sources, it's more than 60% of GDP. It may not be much compared to a country like the US, but Ethiopia doesn't have an export driven economy, so it really does put pressure in the lives of people. So let's talk about the underlining issues that actually brought the youth to the streets.
Right.
It's economy, it's jobs, and they want to be included. They want to see a governance structure in the country that enables them. Average age in the country is about 17 and a half years. We have a significantly youth population. We need to keep creating jobs, and the government cannot provide those jobs. The private sector needs to be involved. So this, too, is a very, very, very positive development that needs to be handled cautiously.
Right.
Just to add to this, to expand on the privatization, part of the moves that Abiy Ahmed's administration is now looking at is rooting out corruption. So they have reshuffled entities that overlooked a huge amount of money. That includes one of the board members that the former PM's wife was sitting on. That was the biggest news actually in the past
few weeks.
State-run companies. Part of the reason why this privatization conversation is very controversial is because you're shaking the core that held huge
big money makers
basically, and so opening it up to more opportunities. We'll see how that that's the most important thing. And corruption, and we're talking about this with Henok right when we're walking in. Corruption is rampant, not just in Ethiopia and everywhere, but specifically rooting out corruption is a process that's going to be very, very interesting to watch in the coming weeks. And he made it one of the major points of his conversation.
So there's going to be confrontation within the party system now of the people who have been eating for so many years.
And he actually calls it organized corruption.
He said sabotaging. There are people using this opportunity because, you know, a lot of people have been released from prison as well.
But also looking at it from, you know, a regional or, a political strategy point of view, is so this kind of organized corruption is co-optation. You know, a regime that's not democratic, what they do is they provide a little bit of feed to the elites that help them sustain political power. And I say I'm going to be very, very cautious about how the privatization is going to take place. Ethiopia doesn't have a stock market. The market is not organized properly.
Exactly.
How are you going to sell? Who's going to buy? So are you getting rid of the old, corrupt, co-opted system
and bringing in a new regime?
I'm not saying he's doing that, but we need to be very cautious of how that's done.
Yeah, it's just opening it up.
Right.
And another actually very interesting, I don't know, in terms of the priorities of Ethiopia, I don't know where it stands, but Abiy also announced that Ethiopia is going to have its build its navy. This is a landlocked country.
Right.
And the reason why I'm bringing it up is because he's going to be involved with with a relationship that we've seen the past couple of weeks with Sudan, with Kenya, with Djibouti.
He's been traveling quite
exactly.
often in those areas.
And so I don't know what your thought process is on this one. But
you know, he comes from a military point of view, and right. maybe he might have romanticized. because, I mean, really, unless you have the Navy, Ethiopia has so many rivers and lakes. No, funny. Seriously. And why do you...
Which makes good sense that he's trying to have good relations with Eritrea since they have access to the port and having that...
We'll see how that goes.
Yes, but in that case, then it would be...
collaborating, just like what he was doing with Sudan and Kenya.
But having...
And Djibouti.
Having a national or somewhat private sectors investing in the shipping industry, that makes sense because Ethiopia imports a lot of materials, particularly from China, and most of that logistics is being carried out by Chinese companies. So there is money to be made and money to be saved because the country also has a foreign currency crunch, so that would be the right strategy
right.
instead
Ooh.
Of spending money on the Navy.
Date is very expensive list for Ethiopia these days, apparently.
And we'll take a quick break. I'm in the studio with Henok Fente and Salem Solomon. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. And thank you all for joining us. Do not go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi with Henok Fente and Salem Solomon in the studio here on the Voice of America.
Let's pull back a little bit because we went into the nitty-gritty of some of these reforms, but let's talk about some of the things that led up to the resignation of Desalegn, the rise of this new prime minister, some of the protests that we saw, the state of emergency, the Ethiopian government's initial reaction was confrontational in the beginning. When we saw protests on the street, the state of emergency, the soldiers beating people, the shootings and all that, what was it that happened that made them feel like this? Maybe we should not be confrontational with these people anymore. Maybe we need to start making the right changes.
You know, that's so intriguing because 3 years ago, I was covering the elections in Ethiopia, and it was so difficult for me to find voices. It was difficult for me to find someone doing a vox pop in the streets of Addis, in the streets of any regional town, just taking a vox pop. 100% of people said they were going to vote for the ruling party. And they did not necessarily support, and they were not 100% supportive of them, but... The ruling party had this structure, and you and I have talked about this Maoist type of structure that they had built, where one in every five group of people, I mean, it's the three of us here. If there were like two engineers working here, one of them would be reporting our discussions all the way up to the prime minister. So they had this interesting human network that they had built. And it is that very network that reorganized itself, by the way, and came back to bite them. The Keros, most of them, they use the same structure. I'm not saying everyone that was a Kero was working for the EPRD. But the system, that human network is what, brought. So it's
explain to us what the Keros is, because this is the second time you mentioned it. For many of our listeners don't understand the dynamics of Ethiopian politics. What's the Keros?
So in Oromia, that's the most populous region in Ethiopia, ethnic wise as well. Ethiopia has an ethnic federalism, so Oromia region. So these are young people who have organized themselves, and they said, you know what, enough is enough. We're going to go out. We're going to protest. We're going to demand peacefully. And their sign was crossing their arms.
Yes.
They would go out to the streets and start demonstrating. Now, they started attracting international attention initially. This has been going on for a little more than 2.5 years. They started gaining international attention because some of the people also, you remember the Olympic silver medalist sympathized with the cause and all of that.
And that went viral, yes.
Exactly. And the reaction, the forceful reaction on the killings had brought the country's human rights records in the highlights. So that really created international attention. But at the end of the day, what really led this youth to come out, and for some of the young people within the EPRDF to organize themselves and somehow organize the same way that people were organizing in the streets of Oromia and Amhara and all of that, to end what was a Tigray-dominated political centralization in the ruling EPRDF, which is a coalition of five regional parties. But, however, most of the security apparatus, most of the economic and financial sectors of the country were controlled by the TPLF, which were minorities. So it was a fight of majorities versus minorities inside.
It was an internal fight.
Internal fight, and there were young people leading it.
Okay. I would like to also add on the Kero, who the Kero are, for instance. Okay, so the Oromia region and also the Oromia system has its own ancient cultural organization. They have their own legal system. They have their own youth organization. So the Kero are part of this. They are the youth. They provide security. They listen to their Gera system. By the way, this protest that you're mentioning used to happen before 2015 in a place called Ambo in 2014. There were unorganized but still small bursts of some sort of like protests happening before became as big as it was. The Oromia region realized that there is meaningful change if they organized. I think that's what we saw in the past 3 years. I also happened to be in Ethiopia right back we met with Henok when I was there. I was there for a conference. I wasn't reporting. But what the sentiment I felt, and I felt it in most of the places I went, in Addis Ababa, the capital city, and key touristic attractions that you saw. Most of the key touristic attractions were controlled by people who, I mean, there was the street in the, you know, people, if you ask average people in the streets, they would have the sentiment like they felt like they were left out from gaining or being beneficiaries of economic benefits that you see.
There was a lot of prosperity that you see visually, but there weren't. People on the street don't feel like they're benefiting.
Yeah, and there were comments that you when you hear it, and because I speak both Tigrinya and Amharic as well, I sensed things that an observer would watch and understand the nuances that are not really clear for someone who's just visiting.
Yeah, right.
And Henok could really also add to the sentiment, but that has been going on for more than just 20 years.
So there was a resentment building for over time.
Yes.
So what kept that resentment from, you know, boiling and spilling over was the fact that, okay, so if you want to be that person who, without working so hard, or you didn't even see the progress, someone who had a very small business, a corner shop, builds a 10-story skyscraper,
all of a sudden,
and the only game in town back then was jump on board, try to be loyal to this party. The message was you can be that guy. So people were banking on that. But then people started seeing, okay, so there's another alternative. Why don't we change the game?
Which is a positive thing. And we're seeing it across different parts of Africa. And also, like, you know, opportunities when foreign investors would come and put opportunities on the plate. If you had people close to where decision makers are, you got opportunities. These had ramifications because of that. And I think Henok also mentioned quickly that, you know, foreign investors, including the Chinese, for instance, are coming in places. By the way, China is touting Ethiopia as a success story in their propaganda videos now as we speak. Absolutely. But in the past couple of weeks, we're seeing that, you know, economic changes might come ahead of us, and we'll work on this in the
coming
weeks.
We're actually collaborating on a story because China is somehow scaling back.
Really?
Yeah.
Guys, we are running short of time, and we will have to end our discussion here today. You are listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. That was Henok Fenty and Salem Solomon. They were helping us understand some of the dynamics of the political changes, the political reforms that we are currently seeing in Ethiopia under the leadership of the new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed. We will bring you the second part of this conversation
next week we'll bring you the next installment in our conversation with Henok Fente and Salem Solomon and some other people, analysts, who have been following this story, because it's quite an important development on the African continent. What happens in Ethiopia affects not just Ethiopians, it also affects everybody around it. It's such a big country, the second most populous nation on the continent. It's also one of the biggest economies on the continent. It's fastest growing economy on the continent. So whatever political developments, economic developments that take place in Ethiopia are of interest to everybody else on the continent, and including also to the Western world. But we thank you all for joining us today, and we want to thank Henok Fente and Salem Solomon, and we look forward to continuing this conversation next week. We'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
This is VOA.